thank you very much. First of all, I have to excuse because I kind of like the slides are in English. I made the talk description in English, but I think I messed up in the conference system and didn't select the English language. So sorry for that. I want to give an overview and kind of an introduction about the current state of Linux on smartphones. This is like going on for a long time, obviously. We had like early devices back in 2007 and 2008. And what is there, what is working, why are we doing this? Is this kind of like usable as a daily device? If yes, good. If not, why not? I will start with a short introduction and kind of like a motivation why it actually, from my perspective, makes sense to have Linux on smartphones. And then why I think it could work out and how you can get involved and how we can get there. So some words about myself. I'm not giving talks very often, so kind of like not everybody might know me. I'm Guido Günther. I'm a Debian developer since some time. I'm an occasional GNOME contributor. I'm working on the Fosh mobile shell. I'm a freelancing free software developer, and I'm currently working with Purism on the Librem 5 phone, which is a Linux-based phone. So this will like come up every now and then in this talk. Then kind of like I want to start with what I consider to be Linux mobile. But before that, let's have a look at mobile operating systems at the moment. These numbers are from Wikipedia. The last ones are from 2018 down there. And if you look at it, then it's like basically Android and iOS, and all the rest is basically non-existent. iOS in itself is like a proprietary operating system, Android to a large extent. So can we do better and have more free software on our devices? First of all, one could say, well, there's AOSP, like the Android Open Source Project, which is the open source components of Android. Why not just use them? I think that has like at least one big problem. That is basically every new Android release, Google pushes out their Android, and it's basically their Android. So that's kind of like from the governance side, it's a bit hard to participate there. Due to some legal restrictions, if you sell Android-based phones, you usually can't fork it either. And more stuff of AOSP moves like from AOSP into proprietary components with Google. So that doesn't sound like a very attractive approach. On top of that, there's Google Mobile Services, which you basically need to have like a good phone experience nowadays. There are thankfully projects like Micro-G, which work on replacements, so Android-based phones can use more free software, which is great. But the other problem is that vendors, such as Qualcomm, for example, add additional proprietary components to support their hardware, and also kind of like on the software side, many applications aren't free software. So doing this like based on Android is hard. So let's try with the classic Linux approach. So we use a Linux kernel or a very, very close to mainline Linux kernel. That means kind of like we have like, I don't know, 10,000 lines of diff to the Linux kernel and not about like 5 million, which Android's kernel do usually. It is all free software. It targets smartphones. It uses GNU Linux or Linux Userland APIs, so you will find all of your well-known components. It doesn't matter if you're in the SYS5 or systemd camp, in the GTK or Qt camp. All this runs on those phones. But we don't kind of like just want to shrink our desktops that we have. We also want to kind of like have convincing frameworks for mobile applications, which need to be there. And ideally, we also want to have like enough band-aid to help existing applications along. So it would be great if we could like reuse existing GNU Linux applications. I will look at these points a little bit in detail. So why target smartphones at all? Is this even like an interesting market? Well, so if you look at like the sales from 2020, then there's way more phones sold than laptops. So if we miss out on smartphones, then it's very hard to kind of like claim that free software ate the world, because would be forced to run with heaps of non-free software in our pockets. And the scary thing is these all have like microphones and cameras and all kind of sensorics, and we carry them in our bedrooms and our bathrooms and whatever. And I think it's like worthwhile to have a trust chain that I can actually trust that device and not spy on me. Although I have nothing to hide, as everybody. So why all free software? Like the well-known point is kind of like you want free software because you have user freedom. Freedom is the user is in control of his device. The point I just like came across just like earlier is you know where your data goes, so you can kind of like decide what data you want to publish and which ones you don't want to publish. The aim is to have like user instead of vendor control, so you determine the update cycles and not the vendor. And the life cycle of the device itself is limited by the hardware, not the software. So we can imagine that like a smartphone that is like 5 years old that doesn't support 4G or 5G that kind of like isn't usable for all things you want to use it, but it still works, and it's not limited by the vendor not supporting the software anymore and its life cycle. It's like only limited by the hardware side. This can allow us to kind of like have way longer support cycles for the and use our phones way longer if we want to. It also actually raises like the value of your phone when you want to sell it again. So on Linux Mobile, we want to use a mainline Linux kernel. That means like no binary blobs. We know that drivers are maintained because they are just like dragged along API-wise by the upstream kernel community. You can just update to get the latest security fixes. That's the kind of like established model. And you only have one place to fix, so you don't have to kind of like submit it to your vendor. You don't have to submit it to Google for Android, and you don't have to kind of like fix it upstream. You have just like one location, and it will be at the right places. And you actually know where to send patches, which is like great. From the user space side, we want to have the user space look very, very similar to what we have on a desktop. So at the bottom, I have the Linux kernel. And the user space is basically built of well-known components like systemd or sysv. If you're not in the systemd camp, you have libc, which is either glibc or in the case of PostMarketOS, it's muscle-libc. You have network manager, modem manager for configuring the network and the modems. There's mesa for the 3D acceleration. You have like other components you know of the desktop like PolicyKit and uPower. And in this example, I just like put there a Fosh session because that was the quickest for me to draw, where you have like the upper components that give you the UI, and in between is like almost a regular GNOME session. So this builds very, very heavily on the GNOME stack. The good thing about this is security support is sorted out for us via distributions. We all kind of like know how Debian works with its release cycles. We know how we get the updates there. So there's kind of like nothing new to invent. Again, it's all free software. We have already lots of existing good applications. The problem might be that it doesn't fit on a phone screen, so we might have to redo them to some extent. I get to that in a minute. And it allows you to use your phone as a laptop and use the exact same application. So if you kind of like attach to your phone like a keyboard and an external display, then you can run Inkscape, LibreOffice, and whatever. So you don't have kind of like two sets of applications, and even if you run this, you have the same versions. How do we kind of like get? How do we get applications to fit on the phone screen? I have one example here, which is like from GNOME, which has a toolkit which is called LibAdvaita, that is used in many applications across the GNOME stack in 42 and 43 already, and that basically allows you if you have a application that kind of like needs some space on the screen. You have kind of like the menu on the left, as you know it from a smartphone, and you select one of the points, and then it kind of like shows you the right side of the screen. And kind of like if you swipe back or if you hit the little like arrow in the top left, then it will go just like to the other thing. That makes it work very nicely on small screens. And if you have a bigger screen, like on your laptop, then you just kind of like the window becomes wider and you see both panes at the same time. This is not GNOME Control Center, but GNOME Control Center nowadays works very, very similar. So it kind of like just shrinks to the small size, and you can also use it on a large screen, which makes this component perfectly reusable and usable on a phone. For GTK3 applications, there's a similar toolkit which is called LibHandy, just to mention that one. So what can we do for all the applications? So if you have this, I've chosen Gobi here as an example. Gobi is a tool for collaborative text editing. I don't think it's like very much used anymore outside of Debian, but kind of like I just picked that as an example. You see that the application itself fits rather nicely it's obviously not optimized for mobile use, so you kind of like don't have any swipe gestures. You have the classical menu bar, which is hard to reach by fingers. But if you really want to use that application, you can start it. But one problem is that the connect to server dialog doesn't fit. And if you kind of like if you're on the road and you really want to use that one and you wouldn't be able to reach the connect button, then you would be stuck. But we have a feature which basically allows it to tell the Wayland compositor to shrink oversized surfaces so they fit. That very obviously kind of like doesn't look good because you have different font sizes there. So it won't give you a very good overall impression. But you can use the application. You don't have to throw it away or rewrite it. So that kind of like can build a bridge to reuse existing things. And this is like even configurable per application. So you can start an app that kind of like looks what applications are running at the moment, and then you can toggle it individually. So at if at some point Gobi is getting fixed, you kind of like just like switch the slider back, and it will not be scaled down anymore. So that's kind of like very useful to reuse existing apps. That's basically like in a nutshell the approach that we take for bringing Linux onto mobile devices. Would there be like any alternatives approaches or shortcuts or anything like that? One bigger component, I will talk about that in a minute, is the kernel. And there have been other approaches that kind of like went for Android kernels. And then on top of that, they have parts of the Android user space can reuse some of the binary components that are there to make camera and other things work, and put Helium and libhybris on top. And this kind of like gives you a GNU-like interface. The immediate benefit you have there is you get very, very broad device support, because basically every SoC vendor ships you an Android kernel. The downside is as long as Android is supported for your device, because as soon as it's not supported, there's lots of binary blobs in there, and that kind of like makes the device obsolete at some point, because you don't not only don't get security updates, you can't also update the other user space components because you're stuck with the old kernel version. So that's not so nice. The other problem is there's no single Android kernel. So if you look at LineageOS and look for the kernel repositories there, then they have like 350 kernel repositories that are at very different versions, at very different states. And that kind of like makes it very hard to support a large number of devices, because you kind of like have to maintain so many different kernel versions. The other downside is that the user space and binary blobs don't magically go away. So you still have these. And this still very much ties you to the vendor support cycle. So as long as you don't have a mainline kernel, you're stuck. And the other big point is Android is not Linux. So if you look at the diff between the OnePlus 6 downstream, so vendor kernel, to the mainline Linux kernel, you see that the diff there is like 5 million lines of code. That's nothing you maintain in a weekend or on weekends, which basically means as you have two problems, stuck with binaries and the large diff, which makes it like kind of hard. So we kind of like settled for mainline Linux kernel, because otherwise it's basically not maintainable, and a Linux user space with a just mentioned components. And so why do I think that can work out? One important thing is there that 2019 saw the first devices since a long time that were designed to run a Linux kernel. That's the Librem 5 and the PinePhone. That was a huge engineering effort, but these are there now, and we can use them for this endeavor. And it might sound simple. I've myself been involved in bringing up the Librem 5, and only kind of like to display on the screen what you want to display there. For everyone who's kind of like not working on Linux kernel every day, kind of like you first need an LCD panel driver that is like comparatively simple. You have a display controller. There might be a kernel driver already or not. If not, you have to write it. If yes, and it's a new chip, then you likely have to adjust it. There's a DSI bridge to get the data from the display controller to the panel, including the PHY. You have to kind of like care about the LCD backlight plus the regulators. There's GPU drivers to be written, and a very important bit is like the MESA support, which was the problem for projects for a very, very long time, because they had to be reverse engineered, because vendors usually don't want to show their OpenGL libraries. But there are now devices that have reverse engineered drivers that are working well. In case of the Librem 5, that's the Etnaviv project. Many thanks to them. This made that possible. And if you have these, then you still have to add touch controllers, camera sensors, a camera serial interface, the power management IC, charge controllers, USB chips, accelerometer, compass, proximity. So there's basically lots of stuff you have to get into the mainline kernel to get things working. But once you're there, things get way, way, way easier. And for the Librem 5 and the PinePhone, we have most of these things sorted out. And on top of these, all of these need power management. So if you kind of like just write the driver, it will kind of like keep the chip powered, and it will not be very good, or it will make a warm pocket for you, but the phone won't last very long. But once you implement power management, you gain on battery runtime and these kind of things. So another reason why I think Linux on smartphones can work out is some originally Android-driven devices are nowadays gaining mainline support. Most prominent example at the moment is some Qualcomm Snapdragon chips. It's the STM845 that has like the mentioned GPU support, which is very important. It has the SoC support. It has lots of the baseline stuff there. You can run it on a phone. There's some gaps still, like camera. There's some audio routing issues on some devices. There's like acceleration sensor, as far as I know, currently missing, but the situation there is improving quickly at the moment, which gives us like another handful of devices that can run mainline Linux and the user space I sketched out. So nowadays we are kind of like looking at way more than a handful of different device types that can run this, which I think is actually awesome. And I think this is important because we had this situation before where we had two devices supported and they were around at about the same time, the OpenMoko FreeRunner and the Nokia N900. Who has these or uses these or had these? Yeah. Both of them, yeah. And I think one of the reasons why it didn't work out so well, first of all, it was very early. So 2008 was also the time when Android came around. So Linux was basically very much up to par at that point. But it was very early, and unfortunately, both had like quite different user space stacks and distributions. That is different nowadays. So as I said already, we have relatively broad device support, which is great. We have multiple distributions that support overlapping mobile platforms. So we have distributions like Debian or Mobian. We have Fedora, SUSE, PostMarket OS, Manjaro. So very lots of different applications that ship these mobile things independent. Like some ship Forge and GNOME. Some of them ship KDE. Many of them ship both. Debian is actually gaining SXMO support, which came out of the PostMarket OS community. So there's like lots of cross-pollination that is going on there, which builds a very stable base, which is good. And the other thing is that we have like lots of things of the stack packaged in general purpose distributions. So Debian carries about all what we need, except like maybe for the kernel and U-boot at the moment. The similar situation for other distributions. So this gets us very, very close to have this kind of like work out of the box on some of the devices. And it enables us for a very, very great deal of collaborations. The PostMarket OS folks did lots of groundwork in that area. And we're basically like, now this is like on more people are involved there. And I think that's also adds to a stable base there. And the other upside I see is we basically have the same tools and tool chain and packaging formats and programming languages than we have on our servers and our laptops. So you can basically start today and write an application using GTK and LibAdvaita, and you can, if you don't need any phone-specific parts like sensors or something like that, you can do all the stuff you want to do and test it in small window sizes, even because you can like just shrink the window, and this gives you like a good idea how the application will look on the phone, and you don't have to download like a big SDK from somewhere and then kind of like run an emulator. It kind of like basically works on your desktop device. So what is the current status? So for the Linux first devices, the Librem 5 and the PinePhone, we have like working phone calls. So I think the joke kind of like can it do phone calls, we can like put aside now. We have like mobile data, sensors working, torch working, cameras are working, the LEDs are working, haptic is working, so all the sensors are there. We have like a set of touch-friendly applications that fit the phone screen. So you have your music player, two-factor authentication, I don't know, image viewer, file browser, and all this kind of stuff. And something that I personally wouldn't have expected to that extent is the application list really grows really quickly, and also the applications gaining quality a lot. So we have like a conference application, the way you can have the FrostCon schedule and all these kind of things. What are some of the gaps in that area? So if you're coming from Android, so one of the gaps you might notice is easy camera use. So we are currently lacking like software libraries or that do autofocus and auto white balance and auto exposure. So the usual, you take your phone out, make a photo, and put it back into the pocket is nowadays on these devices, you take the phone out, and then kind of like you have three sliders you adjust for focus and this and white balance and exposure, and then you can take good photos. So the hardware is there, it's supported, but we kind of like lack on the software stack there. Sorry. And another problem is efficient video encoding. So if you're into TikTok and doing videos all day, that's kind of like not the thing you want to do at the moment, because that's also kind of like all in software, and that needs to be accelerated. Battery life is improving, so depending on device and usage, you will get through the day, which either means through 24 hours or like your work day without charging. But usually all the people that I know that use these kind of devices carry a power bank at the moment still, because battery life kind of like needs improvement. It also needs some user space component. I get to that kind of like that that will kind of like slow down rogue processes to not use CPU. Instant messaging diversity is an issue still. So we have good XMPP support. We have good matrix support. So these ones, which are very common in the free software communities, are very well supported. But things like Signal, Telegram, and others still need tinkering. You can get them to work, but it's kind of like not just install an application and it works. We also don't have like easy VoLTE setup, which is not that much. So VoLTE is voice over LTE. This is usually not so much of a problem in Germany, but there's like large parts of the world where you only can do VoLTE, and this kind of like either requires you to issue some AT commands or execute some scripts, which is kind of like also not like 100% end user friendly. Other gaps, kind of like not so much on the phone side. We currently lack in all free software app stores. So FlatHub is there and it's great. And it also kind of like has features which allow you to filter by form factor. So you are able, if you use, for example, GNOME software, to only see applications that only match your phone screen. It also has like working sandboxes via Flatpaks. But one big thing missing at the moment is like payments, because I think so if we want to like have many apps written, I think there might be people that kind of like want to be incentivized on these kind of things. So having something with a payment system and only offering free software would be like a big plus in this area. And that doesn't only affect like the app itself. I don't think we also don't have like very good systems where if there are people that fix all across the stack or all across the applications, we don't have a way to incentivize that at all at the moment. And I think kind of like getting more people involved would also kind of like need to figure out how we can do this, because for the hardware side, it's usually you have like paid longer term developers or contractors, but for the application side, we kind of like need to find a sustainable model where people can, if they want to, make a living. The other thing is runtime management of applications. So at the moment, if you have a rogue process that kind of like eats all CPU, you can see how your battery kind of like will go down very, very quickly, and we don't stop them at the moment. So the ideal version would be it has its own defaults, which kind of like allows kind of like halt processes in the background, and the user has like a way to override it, so it can still kind of like use the phone to their desire. It's not meant to be as it is on other platforms where they are just like being killed off, and you have no way to change that. And there are people running it as their only phones nowadays, so it's kind of like not only a handful of people. So it works if you kind of like can live with the limitations I pointed out there. And the situation is improving rather quickly, which I find very, 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 very promising. Do you want to use on your device? Kind of like I listed some devices before. I think like the one thing to go if you kind of like get a random phone is look at PostmarketOS, because they support a broad lots of devices to a different degree, but they have nice wiki pages which will tell you if the device is basically completely working, or if it boots a kernel and doesn't bring the display up. So this is basically like the range you have from devices there. But I think it's kind of like worth checking if you have like an old phone in your drawer and can put that on there. If you're more into the Debian camp, then Mobian might be a thing. Mobian is basically carrying the difference of things you need to run a smartphone at the moment that aren't in Debian at the moment. That means, for example, kernel, U-boot, special configuration options for low power consumption and these kind of things. It might be, but that's not so much the case nowadays. Or that, oh yeah, there are some applications still that need some special patches which aren't like upstream, so Debian can carry them because they might break the desktop experience, for example. So they carry these packages as well, and the effort is basically to make that smaller and smaller, and I think I can say that this works really well. So I think the delta between Mobian and Debian really went down during the last couple of months. And if you're owning a Purism device like the Librem 5, then I'd recommend to try PureS because that's the thing it's shipped with. Maybe the interesting point there is like the PureS that is there is exactly the same that is run on the laptop. So it's really like one set of software that is run on the phones and on the laptops. The package set is slightly different, obviously, because like, you need different applications. But it's like if you have like GNOME Control Center installed, it's exactly the same package, just like built for another architecture, because the laptops are Intel and the phones are ARM64. But it's kind of like really a consistent set of packages for both things. And the other thing which I think is very often overlooked is you can use these things as PC in your pocket. So there's like these things like which are called docks, which I kind of like wanted to show. And this looks like a laptop, but it's basically a display and a clever USB-C chip and a keyboard and a touchpad and a battery. And you can put your phone in and then you can use it as a laptop on the road. So you don't have to carry that. I didn't bring a laptop to this conference. And the other thing you can do is you can use it to give talks. So that's you don't have to carry a laptop around anymore. I think that's really nice. Like one last thing is kind of like if you want to get involved, how to help. I think one very important point is like please don't accept proprietary applications. So even if you're on Android, look at F-Droid, look for free replacements because that actually helps a lot to make people aware that there's other things. As a tinkerer, I said that before, get a Linux mobile device and start experimenting. It's very likely that you have some old one in a drawer. Look at the PostmarketOS pages and see if you can get it running. If it runs and it's a well-supported device, then good. If not, start hacking. As a web developer, maybe think about mobile Linux people when designing your applications. So since there's not so many apps, we very, very often use the web pages to have access to certain services. So be aware that there might be people with small form factors that are using that because they can't use the Android or iOS apps. If you're like a distribution hacker, there's a nice list of applications for mobile devices running Linux at linmops.frama.io. Not all of them are in every distribution. So if you're kind of like into Fedora or whatever, then kind of like look at the list, look what's missing or what you would like to see there and package it up. As a kind of like developer, write the application you miss the most. As a user, I can just recommend to buy a device that runs Linux mobile because that kind of like supports the whole situation. And it, at least in the case of Purism, I can say also pays developers hours. Otherwise, this won't be possible. As a student, maybe do your master thesis on Linux mobile. We have lots of things to figure out. Like I said, auto white balance, autofocus, and this kind of stuff. We also kind of like could think about secure boot and all other things. So there's lots of stuff. Also the runtime management I was talking about, kind of like I could imagine could be a thesis or something. And as a hardware vendor, I can only recommend to use mainline Linux. You can get it to work. It's way better than sticking with the vendor kernels. And that was already my talk. I thank you very much. Please send any feedback and point out any errors, either via email, the Fediverse or Matrix. And I think we have some time for questions, I would assume. Yeah.
Who's got any question? I'll carry the microphone to you, and that your question will end up on the video.
If we look at how mainline Linux is run on devices, is developed for devices, This has a bit changed over the course of like this whole, how this was done. So in the end, Nokia used to be a pretty strong player quite early, as you said, and then like in the Nira times, for example, like Celfish and Yola were larger players and contributed quite a lot to the ecosystem, but as a long time Celfish user, I can see that these things are getting rather stuck and would currently see like real free software projects which are not just backed by a single company like as the more promising players right now. So I would like to ask you, what's your perspective on company involvement, community involvement, how strong at which time and why things have developed the way they are right now?
Okay, I think there's several things. So regarding community involvement, I kind of like had that try to emphasize that. Is I think we have like this time we have really like a rather broad support like within distributions, also in upstream projects. So I mentioned GNOME. I can't speak so much for KDE because I'm not involved there that much, but in GNOME it's kind of like the libraries you need to make mobile ready applications are really part of core GNOME. It's not kind of like with the N900 where kind of like you have the Hilden project, which is a fork of GTK in many ways and also has additional libraries. All of these libraries for the application side are all part of GNOME, and many of the GNOME core apps are using them. So they might still need fixes, so you get and might not get their testing on mobile at the moment as they kind of like could, but the amount of stuff you need to do to get it working there is really, really way lower this way. The designers that are working within the GNOME projects are very much aware of mobile and are interested in this topic. So I think that's kind of like as good as it can get in the user space side. I think in the kernel side, it's similar. Now that we have like a mainline Linux kernel, there's lots of interest. There's also people still working on mainlining the N900 kernel code. And there's lots of interest there kind of like to get things together and kind of like have more of a Linux mobile or Linux phone view of the Linux kernel. So I think the community involvement there is great as well. One problem I see with some of the approaches is like many of them over the last years if we take out Nokia maybe and the OpenMoko is many of them kind of like use the vendor kernels for their devices. And that's a big problem because you lack large parts of the you gain large parts of the user space stack because camera is sorted out for you and other stuff, but you're very much bound to what the vendor does there. And I think if we can get to a reasonable amount of devices that can run mainline Linux, we have like more flexibility and are more robust against like single companies going away, which was always the problem before. And the other thing is, from what I can see at the moment, I think the companies involved there and that I mentioned are not going or intending to go away in any way. So I think the involvement there also works. And I think all of them have understood that you kind of like work with the communities rather than forking out something and then see what happens. Because if you want to do that, you need the size of Nokia or something to even get that going. I'm not sure if that answers your question. Or
you said there aren't many applications.
Yeah.
And as a smartphone end user which likes the app for its blog,
yeah,
that's the question. Why can't you just use the free software that is in the
efforts? So I didn't talk about that yet. So to some extent we can. So there's Wadroid and Nbox as projects which allow you to run run Android applications on your Linux phone. Nbox had the problem that it was like very CPU intensive, so the battery would be empty very quickly. Wadroid is a bit better. The problem at the moment is that you basically on top run a whole Android stack. And one of the problems there is that kind of like Android isn't known for using little memory. It kind of like uses way more memory than we use under Linux. So that can get a problem if you want to run lots of stuff. But I can, so I think if Wadroid kind of like matures more, it will become more interesting to run, for example, K9 mail or something like that there. Another thing that might be kind of like sound a bit odd is one thing we're really looking at is that the devices kind of like look consistent. So what I want would I dream of is kind of like that users have the possibility to run these applications, but we have good applications natively that also integrate into the rest of the stack. Let's say copy paste, you want to send out a picture and these kind of things, and that's obviously more effort if you also want to integrate it into Android or into WayDroid. But it's kind of like it's not exclusive. So there is a way now even to run these applications, but it's not very convenient at the moment. If I like it or not, like convenience is like a very important factor on smartphones nowadays. So one of the main reasons why people don't want to try something else, they're obviously not in the in the same mood they were 20 years ago when they kind of like wanted to run it on their laptop and whatever came. So they kind of like, because they rely on it every day, I can understand that. And so we really also need very end user friendly applications there. Yeah. More questions? Yep.
I have a question. How do you think are the chances to get a Linux phone here in Europe? I have been working for industrial automation and using Linux a lot of time, and there are two problems. The first problem was if I go to a chip vendor and say I want to run Linux, they say, yes, no problem, take our vendor-specific Linux and you can quickly start. But we wanted to have a mainline kernel because we have network devices which have to be up to date. And then we took a look at the vendor Linux and saw, okay, they implemented their own drivers. They implemented them in a way which are incompatible with mainline Linux. So chances to get them into the mainline Linux are quite low. And can you sort out all the different vendors? There are the remaining two or three vendors which really support mainline Linux. And the second problem I encountered during the last years, there is RED2 directive from the European Union which says any device having radio interface must be locked so that the customer is not able to change the radio firmware. Problem is, there are radio modules, so they should work on their own. But most vendors, they construct the radio in a way that there is a RAM, you boot it at a good time, you download the firmware, and then it works. And they are not self-contained, but their own, the only memory. And that's led to the situation that I, as a vendor, I have to lock down my Linux system because I have the firmware in my Linux system and I have to upload it to the module at boot time. And I am not aware of a module which is fully self-contained, so I can open the Linux kernel only have a locked down module itself.
I'm not an expert on modems. Nicole is, I'm not sure where. Oh, there she is, yeah. But in the Librem, so if I say anything wrong, you can like correct me. So in the Librem 5, we sidestep that because it's an M2 card and it's self-contained. So you basically plug in that card, you don't change it, and it has the firmware on it. So I think that adheres to the regulations there. To your first question, I think, so one thing is, I think vendors know that like it's not the perfect situation they're in at the moment. So I think I also have the impression that people are, like many of the things that happened for the Qualcomm chips were, as far as I know, are also like backed financially by Qualcomm because you have to get some stuff into the Linux kernel because otherwise Linux moves too fast for you even as a vendor to keep up. So as far as I know, like the OnePlus devices that have an 845 chip, they're still running Linux 4.9. So for them, it's inherently expensive to kind of like do these kind of migrations. So they want to like mainline more stuff. I think that's kind of like plays into our hands. The other thing is, it depending on kind of like the project, it makes sense to vendor to mainline drivers. So for the Librem 5, we basically did something similar. We were in the situation kind of like there was a vendor kernel from NXP. And we had the choice kind of like of trying to use mainline and add the missing drivers and rewrite them in a way that they're acceptable for mainline Linux, or to use the vendor kernel. But I kind of like try to lay out the problems with vendor kernels. And the problem is, if you start with a vendor kernel once, it's very unlikely you move away from that, because nobody wants to pay that. So if it is not something you built into your project at the very beginning, I think it's very, very hard. So I think there's kind of like two solutions to this. One is look at the, like, make hardware decisions based on drivers that are in the kernel or are at least submitted at the point you build the hardware. That's not always possible, but I think that that makes to some extent can help with some decisions. And the other thing is mainline drivers. That might be like not the answer you expected, but it's, that what works.
And I would probably like to add to the regulation issues that you pointed out. These are really a big problem for free software in general, because we also know the discussions going on with the WRT, the routers that you can modify, or potentially you cannot modify the firmware anymore, that you are basically prohibited in certain areas for free software, which is really, really very, very unfortunate. And this is something that we all probably should work together with the FSFE, that they can do their work at the European Union to change these rules in favor of free software again. With the Linux 5 project that I'm also involved in, we had long talks with Wi-Fi module makers, which also as I mentioned, to have self-contained modules that include the firmware inside the chipset. And this is something that module makers don't want to do anymore, because flash is, from the silicon side, very expensive, and RAM much more cheaper, so they don't want to include flash memory into those chips anymore. So yeah, it is a big problem, and we're running into the situation that you have to have this binary block firmware downloaded at runtime. Maybe there's a gray area that it can be used in the regulation, because if the firmware doesn't allow to change certain parameters that would go against these regulations, like specifically power to transmit or channels or something like that, then you could probably get away with the binary block download, but then you still have this binary on the firmware, which we in the free software community also don't want necessarily.
I think so one thing that I find interesting is actually that we now have devices, so it's like not an abstract discussion anymore. So we can like show them to people and say there's smartphones that are running free software, and they kind of like run into these problems. Before we were in a situation where we said, well, if we would build devices that would do this, then your regulations would hurt us. And that's kind of like a way worse position to argue about than we are in now at the moment. I'm not sure if that's enough, but.
Can you explain why Nbox is so CPU heavy? I don't quite get it, because it's just a container.
I don't remember the details. No, I better not. Yeah.
Okay. Any further questions?
What time span would you think would take to defeat our enemies of open source, like DRM or banking apps for mobile Linux?
I hope before I retire. No, I have no idea. It's kind of like, it's also, I think we have like lots of things that are on the long-term way of thinking, but currently it's like lots of firefighting in the same sense that you kind of like try to build like the right groundworks now to kind of like build on it in the future. So I kind of like not kind of like wouldn't make any time guesses there.
My question is, you mentioned your phone and in the beginning that we are limited by the hardware of this phone and instead of the software as we are right now most of the time. So how long do you think we are away from a real flagship smartphone with like compatible specs to a modern, I don't want to say iPhone, but a modern, good, expensive phone with like the least tech you can get.
Yeah.
That would be the point where I will buy a phone and try to use it for the next 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, there's two things to that. One thing is, don't think that the current way of smartphone marketing is like sane. I can imagine when you that you want high display resolutions and this kind of stuff, and that needs some certain memory bandwidth, so which also needs kind of like some CPU power. But what we need under Linux is way less than what you need from the current SoCs. So I think that the current SoCs are in many aspects way over the top when it goes to like power, calculation power, and these kind of things. But it's hard to tell people that they don't need it. So I can sympathize with that somebody wants to build a smartphone. I don't know, because I know that the engineering effort for these kind of devices is very, very huge. And the other thing is, if you want to do it with mainline Linux, the number of chips you can use is like limited at the moment. So I won't make a time guess there either. I hope tomorrow. So if you're a chip vendor and want to kind of like open source all your drivers and help with designing a phone, I think we would say yes, please.
Okay. Any other?
So maybe just more of a comment and of a question, but I think that it's quite important for people to that more people move to mobile Linux. And I think one of the hurdles is still data migration. So if you use Android apps, for instance, and you have like your messages there, or GNOME calls have now this feature of VCF imports, which is really great. But I think we need just more effort to help people migrate the data when switching to this platform.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. And ideally both ways in case it doesn't work out for them, so they can.
I made the observation as a long-time SafeWithOS user. I had the experience that the SafeWithOS platform and the other mobile Linux platforms are very separated from another. On the other hand, I noticed that some applications
Pure Maps,
that's the one I was talking about. That got quite popular under other applications. So how do you see these separate communities, and do you think that they influence each other or support each other or anything like that?
So I think there's like lots of positive influence between like the, so to say, classic desktop environments, KDE and GNOME, and also like the I call it the general purpose Linux distributions that are putting in these components. From SafeWithOS, I mostly know about like people from the SafeWith community that kind of like maintain certain apps, like Renegos for Pure Maps, that are very involved there, and also then bring over these applications, which work very well. I'm Pure Maps user too, and so. I think the current situation is that just like both move on in parallel, and it just needs somebody to kind of like bring the things there together. So it's more like it always needs people. Like Renegos is somebody who kind of like maintains it for SafeWith, but also cares about the other platforms as Flatpak. And if once you have that, you can kind of like have like more common ground to collaborate.
I would probably like to add one point that it also adds to the banking and DRMs, and the other problem here to the data migration. What we all can do as a grassroots thing is to do advocacy for free standards everywhere. Free standards can help for data migration. If you have your data stored on something which is like WebDAV or something like that, this is pretty easy to migrate to any thing, and especially of course also implemented in open source. And what you can also do through sources like FSLE is do advocacy at the political level, so that the politicians mandate free standards and open standards that are accessible for free software communities to implement. Then we can actually get it done.
Yeah, maybe to add to that, I missed the banking part actually. So one thing of the banking part, and that kind of like is why I had the point kind of like about please ask for free software, is many of the people that have a banking app, none asked how it works. So it's basically you get an app and then you kind of like say, okay, I can't migrate to another platform because I don't have that banking app. But very often these are very simple two-factor authentications. We also have apps that support some banks. So it might actually be that this your bank works for you because there are applications that can handle that. But it kind of like needs people to figure out like which bank does, like which protocol underneath and maybe which token to initialize it. And maybe we can like get it done this way, because like the banking apps are not like rocket science compared to other things that need to be done there. Yeah.
I'd say that maybe the bigger problem might be NFC paying, like.
Yeah. Payments is kind of like. He said kind of like the bigger problem is NFC payments and payments in general. It's also kind of like having applications that allow to kind of like pay with your smartphone, which is very common in many areas of the world. And not so common in Germany at the moment, I think, but which we kind of need to address at some point as well. That's true. So we need an NFC back cover first, and then.
Regarding banking, there is already a standard enforced by police in Germany, which is called HBCI, and together with another standard PSD2, which basically makes sure that every customer of every bank can use a common API to manage their payments. So we are already halfway there. The problem is some of those use a proprietary application for verification, for like the second factor of authentication.
I thought they'd be turning it off, actually. That was my.
My platform works.
So I also have only banks that kind of like either send me like a code or something by another means. But
there's a Python library which doesn't really move a lot, so there doesn't seem to be much interest on it. So if anyone wants to make sure that their bank is supported, I would advise you to use the PyFinTS
library and try to like build something on it. I am paying my voices already. Okay. Anyone other questions?
No.
Okay. Great. Thanks for your talk. Astonishing amount of questions. Congratulations, folks. Very impressive. Thank you.
Thank you.